Members, we'll go ahead and get started with today's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Subcommittee. To start us off, Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Yarbrough.
Here.
Representatives Benjamin, Botana.
Here.
Bisotta Cabrera.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Taney.
Here.
Duran.
Here.
Garrison.
Yep.
Hanchowski.
Here.
Joseph. Coster.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Morales.
Present.
Persons Mulica.
Here.
Salzman. Stevenson.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. Again, good afternoon, everyone. Just a quick reminder, please silence your cell phones or electronic devices. And it's good to see everybody today. We have a great presentation today by our AACA Secretary, Simone Marstiller. I want to tell you just a little bit about her before she comes up. Secretary Marstiller was appointed in February this year, but she's not new to government. She brings extensive leadership experience with her to this new role, and she has previously served as secretary of three other state agencies, DMS, DBPR, and most recently, Department of Juvenile Justice. She's also served as Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Jeb Bush, General Counsel in the Department of Legal Affairs under Attorney General Bill McCollum, Executive Director of the Florida Elections Commission, and she also spent 6 years as a judge on the first DCA. So this is a return of sorts. Earlier in her career, she served as Chief Appellate Counsel for AACA, and we are very fortunate now to have her at the helm of the agency. Secretary Marstiller is presenting today an implementation update on the Canadian Prescription Drug Importation Program that was passed by this body in 2019. That created the program for Florida, but federal authority for such importation has existed for some time. The portion of the program that AACA is implementing has the real prospect to save taxpayers many millions of dollars on the purchase of prescription drugs for participants in a number of state programs. So with that, Secretary Marstiller, we're honored by your presence today, and you are recognized to give your presentation. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Yarbrough, and thank you very much for that introduction. Good afternoon, committee members. Actually, it is I who am honored to be here today to provide you all an update on AACA's efforts to implement Florida's Canadian Prescription Drug Importation Program, which, as I'm sure you all know, is a significant priority of Governor DeSantis. As always, just want to do a very brief agency overview. The agency's mission is better health care for all Floridians. We have three core functions. We are the state's chief health policy and planning entity. We administer Florida's $35 billion Medicaid program, and we license and regulate nearly 50,000 health care facilities in the state. We have four major objectives to help us achieve that mission. First of all, we are working to become one AACA, which means we are working internally to break down our functional silos, very much as Governor DeSantis has charged all of the state agencies to break down their functional silos and work together for the betterment of the people in the state of Florida. We are doing the same thing inside the agency. One agency, one team. We are trying to accomplish cost-effective health care for all Floridians, leveraging Florida's buying power, which this particular initiative and program is going to go a long way toward accomplishing that objective. We support initiatives that promote transparency and empower consumers to make better health care decisions. And we emphasize quality in everything that we do to improve health outcomes, always putting the individual first. So just to kind of set the stage for why we, the legislature and the governor, believe that this particular program is so important. We put together this graphic for you just to, you know, give you a big picture. So in 2003, Congress passed the Medicare Modernization Act, which, among other things, authorizes the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to allow the importation of prescription drugs from Canada. Nothing happened with that act for 16 years. Nothing. HHS did nothing. And not until Governor DeSantis came along and was elected, realizing that, among other things, we have to bring down the cost of prescription drugs for the citizens of Florida, he pushed forward and proposed this program. Thankfully, the legislature agreed and enacted this program into state statute. And Governor DeSantis then went on, pushing forward, as he does, to engage the federal government to get some action on this act. But this slide right here really tells you why this program is so important. During the period in which, between the time the act was enacted by Congress in 2003 to 2020, prescription drug prices have increased nearly 181%. To the extent that we are now spending approximately $500 billion on prescription drugs in the United States. So moving more specifically into the discussion. The Medicare Modernization Act of 2003 authorizes a wholesaler or pharmacist to import prescription drugs from Canada under certain conditions and with HHS approval. Now, this doesn't prevent an individual from personally importing drugs today, and that is not our concern with this program. But the bill did not allow for the expansion of importation outside of Canada, meaning we are not permitted to import drugs from countries other than Canada under this act. So again, from 2003 to 2019, there was no concerted effort at the federal level to fully implement the provisions of the act. I wanted to put this graphic in front of you all today so that you can see that already, even before Canadian importation, 72% of the active pharmaceutical ingredients in prescription drugs that are sold in the U.S. already come from other countries. This means that only 28% of those ingredients are derived here in the United States. So this information came from a 2019 presentation by the FDA to the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, the Subcommittee on Health. The takeaway from this is that as our drug market stands today, U.S. prescription drugs rely heavily on active ingredients that come from outside the U.S., and this is being done safely. So transitioning to the high-level overview of Florida's specific program, I'm going to talk to you all today about these five things: the legislative authority and purpose of the program, the FDA approval process and the drug selection process, how we are going to import and distribute the drugs, how we estimate savings, and next steps moving forward. Again, the legislature answered Governor DeSantis's call in 2019 by passing House Bill 19, co-sponsored by Representative Tom Leake and Senator Aaron Bean. The bill created Section 381.02035, and that's the last time I'm gonna cite that statute to you. But that created the program and directed ACA to contract with a vendor that would develop a wholesale prescription drug importation list for the agency's approval, consider which prescription drugs will provide the greatest cost savings to the state programs, verify that Canadian suppliers meet all the requirements of the program, contract with eligible Canadian suppliers, maintain a list of registered importers that participate in the program, and ensure program participant compliance with Title II of the Federal Drug Quality and Security Act. As I mentioned earlier, after calling for comprehensive legislation, Governor DeSantis continued to work with the Trump administration to ensure that this program would receive support at the federal level. So, thanks to him and his efforts, at the direction of President Trump and Governor DeSantis, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and ACA, respectively, began working together to draft a regulatory framework. Now, I would be remiss if I did not thank and recognize Secretary Siobhan Harris, who is currently the Secretary of the Department of Children and Families. She was at the Agency for Healthcare Administration at the inception of this program and did a lot of the work really building this program to what it has become today, the framework. This had never been done, as you know, and she and her team worked with HHS to really build out a framework, and based on the work that she did and the work she did with that agency, the FDA finally published a rule. I believe it was November 2020. It took effect in December 2020, which allowed states to implement the program by submitting a Section 804 importation program proposal. And that's Section 804 of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. So the FDA process, the FDA's process for reviewing SIPs is really two parts. First, the FDA reviews a state's entire SIP. So Florida was the first state to submit an importation proposal to the federal government. We did that in November 2020. Upon receiving the approval from the FDA, which at that point is conditional approval, then we're ready to begin to implement the program. But before we can do that and before we can import the first drug, we have to return to the FDA to present to them the specified drugs through a pre-importation review process. As I mentioned, we submitted our plan in November 2020, and Florida's proposal is phased to ensure safety and compliance with all FDA guidelines, serving as the national model for the upwards now of 20 states who are also pursuing Canadian drug importation. Since submitting the SIP, we haven't simply rested on our hands. Rather, we've been preparing for when we do receive FDA approval. So last December, as directed by the legislature, ACA contracted with a vendor, Life Science Logistics, to support program operations. Life Science Logistics is a leader in the U.S. in healthcare supply chain management and logistics, and has 15 years of service to our nation's strategic national stockpile, and is a valued independent provider of compliant healthcare supply chain solutions. They have turned out to be a really great partner, I have to say, and they're providing critical subject matter expertise on how to simplify the pharmaceutical supply chain. As a matter of fact, in May, this past May, Governor DeSantis announced that the importation facility was licensed, fully licensed by DBPR, and he called on the FDA to fully approve Florida's SIP. Now, as a former secretary of DBPR, I can attest that Florida has a very stringent pre-existing regulatory framework to prevent fraud, adulteration, misbranding, or false advertising in the preparation, manufacture, repackaging, or distribution of drugs that our program aligns with. Now, not only is the facility approved by DBPR, but Life Science Logistics has been licensed as a wholesaler by DBPR. This past July, President Biden directed the FDA to work with all states on drug importation. And last month, we received some additional questions from FDA on our SIP. We submitted those clarifications to the FDA, and now we continue to wait on that agency's final approval. So how did we select the drugs that we included in our SIP? We selected the wholesale prescription drug importation list based on several factors. First, the current cost per pill for Florida Medicaid and the participating state agencies, and I will go through the list of those agencies in a moment. Utilization during calendar years 2018, 2019, and 2020. We looked at whether there are federal and supplemental rebates that are available. We wanted to make sure that there is a Health Canada approved equivalent to the drugs that we use here in the state. We looked at available pricing from Canadian manufacturers, and we wanted to make sure that they share identical Health Canada and FDA labeling information. So by statute, once this program gets moving, the agency is required to review that wholesale prescription drug importation list quarterly which ensures that it's going to continue to meet the requirements of the program. And that also means that from time to time, we will amend our importation proposal as contemplated by the FDA to add drugs as we determine their cost, their effectiveness, and the potential for cost savings to the state. Now, these are the categories of drugs that are included in our SIP at this point. Again, we have a very phased-in approach. We wanted to start narrow and relatively small to make sure that we get this right before we expand this program. We know that it has great potential for expansion, but we want to make sure that we get it right. So we're going to work to import safe, low-cost prescription drugs to treat health conditions such as asthma, COPD, diabetes, HIV/AIDS, hepatitis C, and mental illness. Now, why were these particular categories of drugs selected? Well, again, we reviewed overall cost, utilization, and volume of prescriptions among the participating agency programs to determine the most cost-effective drugs to participate in the initial SIP. Again, as the program progresses, additional drugs can and will be considered for inclusion in future SIP submittals to the FDA. Relative or relevant to our selection of drugs is that current law prohibits certain drug classes from being imported. And you see those classes here: controlled substances, biological products, injectables, infused drugs, drugs that are inhaled during surgery, and high-risk drugs. Okay, now to review the importation process so you get a really good sense of how this is going to flow. We've broken this out into four separate slides, but this is the basic, very basic process. First, Canadian manufacturers would produce the drugs for the Canadian market. Then a foreign seller, which we are required to have by the FDA, foreign seller then purchases those drugs from the Canadian manufacturers. The foreign seller sells those drugs to an importer. For Florida, that is going to be Life Science Logistics. The importer then, of course, imports the drugs into the United States, has to do some relabeling and repackaging, and I'll go into specifics on that in a minute. And then the state agencies who participate in this program will be able to purchase drugs from the importer. The importer will then ship those drugs to the agencies, and then they will be responsible for getting the medications to the end users, their constituents and patients. So Canadian manufacturers, they again sell to the foreign seller for U.S. importation. All prescription drugs must be labeled and intended for sale in the Canadian market at the outset. Canadian manufacturers must sell prescription drugs in accordance with Canadian laws and regulations, and they can either sell surplus supply to us for importation, or they can produce additional quantities. So we're not stealing the supply of prescription drugs from Canada. Just want to make that clear. Initially, the FDA rule allows Florida to work with only one Canadian manufacturer, but upon successful implementation, we can add additional Canadian manufacturers as we move along. The foreign seller is the Canadian wholesaler that purchases prescription drugs from the Canadian manufacturers. The FDA requires that all importations have a foreign seller. That entity is responsible for attaching the Section 804 serial identifiers, or SSI labels, to each lot of prescription drugs. Those labels are required by the FDA to meet track and trace requirements as established by the U.S. Drug Supply Chain Security Act. The foreign seller will then, in turn, sell those prescription drugs directly to our importer. In April 2021, a company called Methapharm was selected as our foreign seller. That company is based in Cyprus, Toronto, and Fort Lauderdale. And our vendor and importer, Life Science Logistics, was very instrumental in getting that foreign seller on board. The importer, again, Life Science Logistics. That company is responsible for, as the name implies, importing Canadian prescription drugs into the U.S. and distributing them ultimately to state agencies. There's a lot that the importer has to do in order to make sure that this program complies with all FDA requirements. They have to submit pre-import requests to the FDA for each drug that we intend to import. They have to arrange drug entry into the U.S. via the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. They have to verify the safety and authenticity of each shipment. They have to repackage and relabel the prescription drugs as approved by the FDA. And they have to distribute imported prescription drugs, again, to the state agencies. And speaking of our state agency partners, pursuant to the statute that the legislature passed, again, our program is phased, and our initial implementation of Canadian drug importation will occur in two phases. The first phase, we will work with these agency partners. So APD will participate on behalf of individuals and patients who are treated in their developmental disability facilities. Department of Health will use these prescription drugs to serve patients of county health departments and free clinics. DCF will use these prescriptions to serve individuals in the DCF-run mental hospitals. And the Department of Corrections will use these prescription drugs to treat the individuals in DOC custody. The second phase of this will then expand and roll out to the Medicaid program overall. And that's where the rubber's really going to meet the road. So this is an overview, basically, of the importation process. Again, the importer, Life Science Logistics, will submit a pre-import request to the FDA. From there, the importer will bring the drugs into the U.S. The importer will then verify the shipment for safety and authenticity, and then repackage and relabel the drug prior to bringing it into the state of Florida. That is a requirement of the FDA. The agency's top priority, as is yours, is that imported prescription drugs are authentic and safe through the following actions: stringent lab testing using industry standard techniques, as well as stability testing to ensure adequate shelf life prior to dispensing. Now, the lab testing and the stability testing will be done at four lab locations that Life Science Logistics has secured. Also, visual inspection to assess for counterfeits. These visual inspections will occur at several different points throughout the supply chain until the product is relabeled. Relabeling and packaging. This is perhaps one of the most important functions that Life Science Logistics is going to undertake. The importation process requires the importer to repackage and relabel all imported prescription drug packages with FDA-approved labeling. So I have an entire script here, but I'm gonna try to make this as simple as possible. When the Canadian manufacturers agree that they want to export the drugs that they manufacture in Canada to the U.S., the FDA is going to require a national drug code and is going to have requirements for labeling for those drugs in order for them to come to the U.S. in the first place. What the importer then has to do under FDA regulations is relabel that, get a new NDC number, and then repackage. Exactly. All of that before those drugs can even come into the state of Florida. Now, I'm going to show you, I don't know if you can see that very well, but the label on the left is, I think this is a standard inhaler. This on the left is an example of what an FDA-approved label will look like on the Canadian drug as it comes into the U.S. On the right-hand side, what you see is the relabeled version of that that our importer, Life Science Logistics, will do. You'll see there's really not that much difference between the two, and in fact, there can't be, because the FDA requires that everything that's on the label as that drug comes from Canada has to be on that label before it is brought into the state of Florida and distributed to our citizens. The only few differences that you will see, the NDC number is different, and the NDC number is right above the name of the drug, so right above where it says, I think that's Combivent. That NDC number is going to be different, again, because the importer has to get a whole new NDC number that indicates who the importer is, and then the other digits mean something else that the FDA requires. The label also has to be very clear that the drug is imported from Canada, and it has to have the name, address of the importer. So again, Life Science Logistics. And you're probably going to have to get a magnifying glass to see this, but that is that last panel on the right-hand side of the image on the right. So what is distribution in Florida going to look like? Well, following importation into the U.S., again, the importer will ship all the relabeled prescription drugs to its distribution facility, which is located in Lakeland, Florida. To distribute imported prescription drugs, state agencies will use an online portal. It's going to look something like Amazon, I guess, ordering from on Amazon. So they will use an online portal to place orders with the importer, which will then ship to designated facilities and providers. The state agencies will then be responsible for what we call last mile delivery mechanisms, which is basically getting the prescription to the end user. Now we are continuing as we look to see how this program can expand to Medicaid. One of the critical things that we are working on is finalizing last mile delivery mechanisms for the Medicaid program. So that means we're having conversations with pharmacies, et cetera. So this is the basic process for state agency ordering. The agency is going to place its order online. So that's, Department of Health is going to place its order online. Life Science Logistics will invoice that agency and will provide the drugs to them by two-day shipping. The agency is going to pay ACA for its order. Life Science Logistics will then replenish the supply as needed and will invoice ACA. So the amount that the partner agencies pay through the 2021 General Appropriations Act, they have been given funding to authorize them to transfer that the payments to ACA so that there's just one payment that is made to Life Science Logistics as opposed to five different or four different sets of invoicing every month. Or I want to say that they're going to be ordering 90-day supplies. But this mechanism makes it a lot easier and more efficient and allows us to maintain the integrity and of the administration of this program. And it could not have been accomplished without the legislature's support and putting this provision into the 2021 GAA. So I wanted you all to see what the facility in Lakeland kind of looks like. As I said earlier, Governor DeSantis in May presented the facility, if you will, to the public, and at the same time, called upon the FDA to hurry up and approve our SIP. I was there. You can't see me. Somehow I didn't make it into the shot. But I want you to see and get a sense of how prepared Life Science Logistics is for this program. Again, I mentioned that LSL is licensed by DBPR as a wholesaler and distributor. This facility was inspected and approved by DBPR. This facility is world class, from technology to equipment to operations, logistics, everything. Right now, we are anticipating using, I believe, 53,000 square feet of this warehouse. But there is space available as this program expands to accommodate more operations. And should we decide that it's the right thing to do, also to engage in mail order operations if needed. So I want to just say a few more things about Life Science Logistics and what they have done and are doing. Again, they secured the lab testing facilities. They secured our foreign seller. They developed the online ordering portal for the agencies. They're going to handle all order processing and delivery to the agencies, as well as handling any returns that may happen. And most importantly, they are going to handle the bulk of the reporting on this program to the FDA. So the agency has estimated, and we did include this figure in our importation proposal that is awaiting FDA approval. As part of our SIP, we estimate that the state can expect to save up to $150 million within 1 year of fully implementing both Phase 1 and Phase 2, which would include the Medicaid program. This estimate is based on, again, agency utilization, cost per prescription, and any rebates or discounts that might be available. The methodology that we have employed here came out of work that Florida and several other states did with a National Academy for State Health Policy to develop tools for states interested in Canadian drug importation. Now, of course, the actual amount of savings that the state receives is going to be contingent on the importer negotiating prices, because that is part of its responsibility. And the estimate may vary, of course, following implementation due to fluctuations in prescription drug pricing. Should we add additional drugs or identify other drugs to include in our importation plan? Rebates that are available and secured, and availability of supply. But this was an analysis that we undertook. We took the classes of drugs that we included in the SIP. We looked at the per pill utilization and cost per pill that each of our partner agencies use. We calculated the total cost of that. Then we looked at the comparable pricing of the same drug in Canada, and that's how we developed the estimated savings. And in some of those instances, committee members, at least a 50% savings in cost that we estimate on particular drugs. It's amazing. So next steps. Once this the program really gets up and running, there are some things that we have to do, ACA has to do administratively. First of all, again, recall that the state statute requires us to review the wholesale drug list quarterly. So we're going to work with our partner agencies. They're going to provide us a refresh list of all the drugs that they currently dispense within their programs. We will review that and put those lists and drugs through the same analysis and estimate that we did at the outset, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we add drugs to that list that are going to get the biggest bang of savings. Those selected drugs will then be incorporated into the state's SIP and submitted to the FDA for approval. Monthly financial reconciliation will be conducted through interagency agreements, and we will develop a report to compare new costs to comparable costs during prior timeframes. And of course, finally, ACCA is required to submit to the governor and legislature an annual report on the operation of the program during the prior fiscal year. So next steps. Once we receive approval from the FDA of our SIP, we'll begin the final implementation steps, including, again, a pre-importation request with the FDA for each imported prescription drug. As I mentioned earlier, our SIP calls for a phased implementation, beginning with the partner agencies that I mentioned, and then later scaling up to the Medicaid program. We're doing this to ensure program integrity and safety and compliance with all FDA guidelines. Now, beyond that, once this thing really gets going, committee members, we can explore opportunities to expand this program to accomplish even greater state savings by incorporating other state-funded programs. Think about it. The Division of State Group Insurance. That would be incredible. But the framework that we have with this program can accommodate that if we do this the right way, and I intend for us to do this the right way. And I have to give Governor DeSantis so much credit for having the vision to see that, to see where this thing could really go. And I have to thank the legislature as well for having that vision and creating this program inside the state of Florida and putting Florida ahead of all the other states getting out of the gate with our plan. Before I turn it over for questions, and I'm sure you all have several, I do want to publicly recognize and thank our small but mighty team at ACCA, who are doing the hard work getting this program up and running, working with Life Science Logistics, working with our agency partners, dealing with the FDA, putting the proposal together, et cetera. So I want to thank and recognize Devona Pickle, who is our program director, and I do believe she's in the room with us today, Matt Brackett, program consultant, and Dr. Nai Chen, senior pharmacist. As I say, a small but mighty team. So I thank you again for your time today. I know it was a lot of detail, but I felt it was important to get to that level of detail so that everyone understands how intricate this program is, but how important it is, and how much potential it has to save the state taxpayers' money. I really believe, and I know the governor believes, that this program will move the needle on Florida's drug market and reduce the cost of drugs beyond those that are currently included in the program. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I am happy to take and hopefully answer any questions that you or the committee members may have.
Secretary, thank you very much for your presentation. And I know you mentioned one might be with us, but you and your team and those who work at ACCA, not only for this program, but for everything you do, thank you. And I'm sure others are listening as well. So we appreciate you and your team's work. Thank you. Members will now open it up for questions for the Secretary. First, I have Vice Chair Caruso, will be followed by Rep. Hanchowski. Vice Chair, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Secretary Marstiller, for your hard work in this arena. I was a couple questions, if I may, Chair. I was wondering, have any other states been approved yet?
You're recognized.
No, sir.
Vice Chair, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And do you in any sense do you feel it's being held up by the FDA for any political reasons?
You're recognized.
I would hope that would not be the case, Representative. Again, our SIP has been sitting at the FDA since November of last year. Right. My hope, and I know the governor's hope, is that with the support, the express support of the president and the directive to the FDA to work with states to get this done, my hope that it's going to get done is that it's going to get done soon.
I hope so. And one final question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. With regards to drugs that Florida will import, one of the ones you mentioned was for treatment of diabetes. But then those that are prohibited or ineligible for importation is insulin. So I was kind of confused there with the idea that we're importing medication. We will be importing medication for diabetes, but it won't include insulin. Am I correct?
Recognized.
Well, while I don't know specifically the drugs, I do know that there are diabetes drugs that are available for treatment that come in pill form. So we're not just limited to insulin.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Rep. Ponchowski, recognized for question.
Thank you, Chair. Secretary Marstiller, I also want to thank you for all the work you do. It seems like almost every meeting I've been in today, you've been there. And when you weren't in the meetings that I was in, you were on television in another meeting. So I just want to thank you for all the work you do. I'm just curious what the current process is for prescription drug distribution, because the way it looks now, you now have one company controlling everything from import, the price of the import, and all the distribution. What is the current way that the drugs are distributed in the system under the current way things are?
You're recognized.
Well, when I look at the four agencies, right, that we're going to start with, each one of those agencies has its own contract with pharmaceutical companies to order prescriptions for the populations that they serve. What we have discovered during this process, and I don't mean to be pejorative about this, but the state's buying power has not been leveraged because those agencies are able to contract individually. The companies that they contract with negotiate different prices and different rebates and different discounts, and we have not been able to properly leverage the state's buying power to the greatest extent, and I believe that this program is going to enable us to do that quite a bit.
Follow-up, go ahead.
Yes, one follow-up. Thank you, Chair. My next question, then, is because you basically have one company, this Life Science Logistics, mm-hmm. that will be negotiating everything and distributing everything, and we had a potential savings of the amount that you put up was 150 million, whatever. Is there some guarantee that year over year there will be a minimum savings incurred to prevent them from getting in the first year and then increasing their margin and lowering our savings?
You recognize, Secretary.
Representative, as of right now, the contract that we have with Life Science Logistics, it's a three-year contract. It's fixed price. Now, we do have the option to renew for another three-year term, but we're going to want to see that what their prowess is indeed in negotiating lower prices. But we are in the driver's seat on this, and we'll make sure that before we make any decision about extending or reprocuring, that we are looking at, we're making sure that the negotiated prices that we're getting are indeed the best prices that we can get.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And just before I go to Ranking Member Joseph, Secretary, is it my understanding that contract was competitively procured? Is that correct?
I think that there is a healthcare exemption or exception in Chapter 287, and I do believe, please don't quote me on this, and if I'm wrong, I will come back to you with the right information, but I believe that that is the exemption that the agency used in negotiating this contract with LSL.
If you can confirm and
let me know. I will do that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. Some of them are quick, so let me start with that. First of all, thank you for joining us today. I enjoyed your presentation. You had mentioned about the importer considering whether, or you were going to be considering whether the importer would start including mail order operations. So I'm guessing it means it's not currently contemplated that it's included. Considering that a lot of our prescription participants, you know, are elderly and they participate in a lot of these programs, my questions to you be, first, what would contribute to that being included, a mail order operation, and when would that determination be made?
You recognize?
Well, the major consideration for that would be indeed whether and the extent to which our Medicaid members, whether that would be a good delivery system for them. Because at the end of the day, to your point, we want to make sure that they are able to get the prescriptions that they need, many of these obviously to treat chronic conditions. Should we ever do that, it wouldn't be as part of phase one. We would only look at that as we implement phase two. But again, that is something that we are going to have to look very closely at. And the need to do mail order, quite candidly, is going to depend on our ability to work with the various pharmacies, large and small, to sign on to this program with us.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next question is about repackaging. You went over the relabeling, and I guess I'm just trying to make sure I understand the need and the basis for the repackaging and what that entails. So is that like a quality control measure? Are they taking the same packaging, or do they have to come up with whole new bottles? Like, unless I missed it, I just want to make sure I understand what's going on there.
You're recognized.
So this is part of this is one of the many requirements from the FDA. It is simply the packaging, the labeling that the importer has to do. I'm certain that it is for quality control, but also tracking and tracing to make sure that, number one, the federal government knows where each one of those prescription bottles is going. And number two, that the individuals, the end users, know very clearly that the prescription that they are receiving was imported from Canada.
Follow-up?
Yes, go ahead, follow-up.
So then it wouldn't require like a whole new plastic bottle. It's just kind of checking to make sure what's in it is actually in it. I guess I'm just trying to, like a two-year-old, understand what's going on.
You recognize, Secretary?
Candidly, I don't know whether the importer is going to have to take the drug physically out of the bottle, for lack of a better term,
okay,
that it comes in, and put it in a whole new bottle. What I do know that they will have to do is the external packaging. That's going to have to be redone with a new NDC number.
Okay, thank you. Last two
Go
sets
ahead.
Of questions. Yes. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I want to follow up on a couple of questions and your answer for Representative Caruso about the SIP. You had mentioned that it had been pending since November of last year, and my two questions would be, what's the average timeline? I know a lot of things take a lot of time with both the state and federal government. What's the average timeline for an approval of this, either in the prior administration or the current administration? Like, what's the normal timeline for such an approval?
You recognized.
Well, again, this is the first time that Canadian prescription drug importation has been implemented.
Okay.
And so there are no approval timelines that the FDA included in its regulations. It's kind of, we're just waiting, candidly.
Okay. So then the follow-up is, as you're waiting and the communication that you've had with the administration, have you had anything to indicate that they are holding it up?
You recognized.
We have had no indication that the FDA is specifically holding it up. But again, it's been since November of last year.
Okay.
And with the president's encouragement and directive, we do hope that the approval comes swiftly.
Perfect. And then last question.
One last.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
You had mentioned earlier that we haven't leveraged the state's buying power. So pending approval of this program, separate and apart from that, is there anything we, the legislature, can do to help you or help facilitate at least the state and starting to leverage our buying power a little bit more than we're doing now?
You recognize?
Well, I think what I would ask each of you to do, if you're willing to do it and can do it, is join us in calling on the FDA to approve this SIP. Because the sooner it's approved, the sooner we can leverage the state's buying power with this program. You know, beyond that, we have several other agencies, I'm sure, who purchase prescription drugs. And we stand poised to, later down the line, as I mentioned earlier, bring them into the fold, and really leverage the state's buying power to save money for the taxpayers.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Representative Koster, and you'll be followed by Representative Tamp. Rep. Koster, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much for being here and for providing this update to us. I have a couple questions. I'll go through the chair because
sure.
They're separate issues, I think. And I think just following up on the last question, is there anything we can do to leverage the state's buying power for domestic drugs that we, like, you know, the SIP is incredibly important, and I agree that it needs to be approved, and we need to move forward on the importation of drugs from Canada. But what about domestic drugs? Is there any way to leverage our state's buying power for those drugs now?
You recognized.
Probably, but can I think about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, quite candidly, right now, what we ought to be able to do, as I mentioned earlier to Representative Honchowski, we've got agencies that are negotiating contracts on their own. Why are we allowing that to happen? That would be a start.
Follow up?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit. With respect to I'm curious about what the process was in selecting the foreign seller. Can you explain to us kind of what that process was in selecting, and I can't remember the entity's or the company's name that is the foreign seller, but if you could explain that process.
You're recognized.
The foreign seller is Methapharm, and LSL Life Science Logistics, as part of its responsibility to the state of Florida to implement this program. They went out, and I don't know exactly what their process was, but they found and negotiated with and contracted with the foreign seller as required by the FDA. So ACA was not part of that process. That was Life Science Logistics.
Go ahead.
So just to follow up on that, is there concern? I mean, so Life Sciences is going to be negotiating with the foreign seller. Is there some concern about the relationship between Life Sciences and Metapharma? And, you know, is there any concern about impropriety between that relationship since they're going to be negotiating with each other and ACA really wasn't even involved in selecting that seller?
Recognized.
I'm not concerned about that, quite candidly. I have every confidence in both companies, number one. Number two, recall that the FDA requires all states to have a foreign seller. And under Florida statute, because we had to get a vendor, which was the wise thing to do, we don't have all of the expertise, obviously, in supply chain logistics and management. I am not concerned that we are risking any games playing between these two companies. The FDA regulations are pretty stringent about what has to happen, what the roles are, the reporting of everything from end to end, from the Canadian manufacturer to the time those drugs are delivered to the agencies, and everything in between. It's going to be transparent. It has to be.
Is that all you had, Rep. Koster? Good. Okay. All right. Thank you. Next, Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you. Hey there. How are you? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about going back to the insulin question. Last year, we heard a very impassioned plea from one of our colleagues, a member who's got a daughter with diabetes, and the cost of the insulin medication that has skyrocketed. So when we were talking about this, in terms of why we're not covering insulin, is it because they're injectable? Is it because of an FDA problem, or just we haven't gone down that road?
You recognize.
Federal and state law prohibit us at this point from including injectables among the drugs that are imported from Canada. So it's current law.
Fella, go ahead.
Yes, what do we need to do about that? Because that is a real crisis. I mean, you think about the children who are Medicaid eligible. You think about, I noticed one of your populations is APD. I mean, we have issues with those. These are children that are going to need these drugs, especially the juvenile diabetic children that are completely insulin dependent. So what do I'm very concerned about that and what we need to do to start working on that.
Recognized.
I would say, Representative, that we should be cautious. There is a reason that right now injectables are not among the categories of drugs that we can import from Canada. That's not to say that they shouldn't be or that they never will be, but I would say let's get this program up and running. Let's make sure that we're doing as safely and as effectively as we can, and then we're in a position to really have a more in-depth conversation about safety regulations surrounding injectables that would be imported.
Thank you. Representative Benjamin, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are we to determine? I know it's a short-term contract that we have with our agent. How are we to ensure that they are getting us the best deals? How do we evaluate their performance?
You recognize, Secretary?
Well, recall when I was talking about how we came up with the overall estimate, number one, and number two, the particular drugs and categories. We have access, we at ACA have access to information where we can see what the pricing is for those medications in Canada. And so we do have visibility and transparency into the pricing that Life Science Logistics is going to negotiate. Now, I will say this, I'm just speaking off the cuff, and I know my team is probably cringing back there, but we're the first ones out of the gate on this, but we have 20 other states, I believe, right now who are right behind us wanting to implement this. There are going to be bases for comparison here shortly across the country. I want our program to be implemented first because Governor DeSantis put us out there first with his vision and his bold action. But at some point in the not too distant future, this is going to become, you know, par for the course. And we're going to be able to see and compare ourselves and how we are performing against other states. We're going to have that information. We have it now and we will have it later.
Thank you. Ranking Member Joseph, go ahead.
Thank you. I wanted to kind of delve a little bit into HB 19. I know that this was tied to the 2003 Florida federal authorization that we're piggybacking off of that specifically tied to Canada. My question for you is, I remember there being a second portion of the bill. The first part of the bill was pretty good, and that's kind of what we're talking about now. Has the agency decided to do anything or not do anything with the second part of the bill, which was more not related to Canada, but other importation from other countries, because that wasn't authorized? I mean, I remember one of the concerns was that that wasn't authorized by the federal authorization, which is why some people took issue with it. And I think there were some maybe safety concerns with the second portion of the bill that we haven't really discussed today. And I think there was one more thing, cost savings, and how we were gonna ensure that cost savings, you know, like what was going to happen with the cost savings. So do you know, and you may not, but it wasn't covered in the presentation today, anything about the second part of the bill that was a little bit more tricky?
You recognize for a three-part answer.
Well, because the federal law and regulations only permit importation of prescription drugs from Canada, that's where we are.
So am I free to conclude that we're just not touching the second part of the bill that went beyond importation from Canada?
You recognized.
For now.
In as much as federal law prohibits any other kind of importation, we can't.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Morales, you recognize for a question?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I have a simple question, and I'm just curiosity. This is just a curiosity. I see on page 17 of your presentation, you mentioned that the FDA ruled allow Florida to work with only one Canadian manufacturer. My question is, how was that selected? I mean, what was there a process involved? Could you be a little bit more detailed about it? Thank you.
You recognized.
The manufacturer has not yet been identified or selected because the FDA is requiring approval of the SIP before a state can engage with a Canadian manufacturer.
follow up, Representative Morales? Go ahead.
Thank you. So is there a process to get that zip? In other words, does the Canadian participate? Do they have like a bungle of Canadians that will put in their suggestions for that zip, or you just like it just mentioned it, or I just want to be a little bit more specific. I'm sorry.
You recognized.
Well, the agency is going to work with our vendor to identify potential manufacturers. Then I suspect there will have to be conversations had. Canadian manufacturer, since the states are only limited to one right now, that's not always going to be the case as these programs ensue and become more mature. But for right now, Florida and other states are only going to be able to engage with one Canadian manufacturer. So there will have to be conversations and negotiations before we settle on and engage with a Canadian manufacturer.
Thank you. Representative Garrison, you recognize for a question?
Thank you, Chair. Madam Secretary, quick question on the federal approval process that you've described. I think everyone on the committee, there's a bipartisan frustration with the slow pace of the federal bureaucracy. I wish I could say I was surprised, but I would be lying to you if I said that. Do we have any indication from the federal government about just the process itself? Are we being told this is in a review stage? Is it sitting on someone's desk? Do we have no idea? I'm curious about what we can expect this process to look like going forward, or are we just flying blind as it relates to the SIPs approval process or review process with the federal government?
You're recognized.
Well, again, first of all, the FDA has not given itself a timeline, right, for approving these. We do know that the FDA has looked at our SIP because it came back to us earlier this summer with some questions and some things that they needed clarified, and we supplied that information in August. So there is movement. But beyond that, kind of a black box, I think, for all of us.
You follow up, Rep? Good? Okay. Any additional questions, members? I do have two brief ones, Secretary, if you don't mind. With regard to the safety and authenticity verification part of the process, we spoke about lab testing, the relabeling, and all of that. Because you mentioned about each unit, I guess, each bottle would have to, in essence, be relabeled. And then as far as testing, is it each dose that they literally test, or is it each package of doses? I know that's a granular question, but how specific is the testing? I guess I'd like to know.
My understanding is that it will be a sample. That's my understanding. But the testing is going to be done at, I want to say, four labs across the country who do this work, the testing and the verification. And then the relabeling has to occur after all that is done at LSL's facility in Indianapolis, because, again, the relabeling and the repackaging has to occur before the drugs come into the state of Florida.
Okay, so they've already come into the country, but they can't come to Florida without that happening first.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question related to the other agencies. You mentioned that the partner agencies, Florida's other departments that dispense drugs, when is it they need to provide you with a refreshed list of those drugs that they dispense? I guess that's kind of the workings of phase one now, even though we don't have the SIP approval. What's the timeline on them providing you the information you need to get it moving?
Well, our anticipation is that once we get FDA approval and we get that sort of second level of approval for the individual drugs that we want to import, we are ready to go in 90 days. And I think I mentioned earlier that with the online ordering process, the agencies will order 90 days worth of supplies. So in between that 90-day period, they get us their list, their refresh list, okay, not only of their needs, but then quarterly we're going to be looking at their other utilization to see if there are other drugs that we can include and should include in the SIP for further FDA consideration.
Okay, thank you. It's helpful. Ranking Member Joseph, did you have a final question? Go ahead.
So one's a question and one's an offer. So the question is, so looking at the packet on page 11, I understand that the FDA rule took effect in December 1st of 2020. So like, just then, Do you know if there have been any other SIP, you know, packets submitted by any other states under that new rule, under Section 804, or are we still just the only one?
You're recognized.
I don't believe that Florida is the only state. I know that we were the first state. You know, again, some 20 other states are in various stages of developing their programs. I think some states are still trying to pass legislation to even, you know, begin the program. So all of the states are in different stages. But I do believe that some others have submitted SIPs. I just don't know which ones.
All right. So the offer is...
Go ahead.
Thank you. So the offer is, I would love to work with you to see what we can do to accelerate the process, or at least figure out what the timeline would be, because that seems a little unclear to me. And to the extent that we can help facilitate that, I would love to help you do that.
Thank you. Members, any additional questions for the Secretary? Okay. Well, members, thank you for the robust discussion today and the questions. Vice Chair Caruso, you had some? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, with the Secretary asked for us, she's asking us to call on the FDA to approve the SIP. And I'm wondering if, as a committee, we could exercise that process.
Let me ask Eric, our chief, is that something that typically takes place? Give me one moment. Okay, my understanding is that typically would be, as a House, we would speak through a joint resolution versus as a committee. Individual members, I'm sure, could write a letter if they like, but if we're speaking more with one voice as a body, then that would come from the full House as a joint resolution to another agency of government or to Congress.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Ranking member?
So I think, based on the presentation, most members of the committee are interested in trying to see what we can do to facilitate that. What I would propose, in lieu of just having people just send messages about stuff, maybe a couple folks from the committee can follow up with the Secretary to see kind of where we are in the process, because there may be an actual timeline or whatever, and we just need to know what it is. So it might make sense to just figure out what that is first before we just run off and start doing certain things. But I think we all want to encourage approval. I don't think anybody on the committee so far doesn't want to encourage approval. But it might make sense to figure out where we are in the process before we just start doing resolutions. Just a suggestion.
I appreciate it, Ranking Member. And Secretary, to the point of the Ranking Member, and I know you went through it in your presentation on the timeline, we in essence have been waiting since late last year, and there's been no other updates that we've received that you know about?
Well, not since we submitted our additional clarifying information to the FDA in August. I will say that the FDA has stated in another forum, that it just doesn't have a timeline for approval. So, but please, I would love to have a conversation, and we would welcome any and all support from any members of the legislature to get this thing done.
And also to the Ranking Member's point as well, Secretary, just keep us apprised on anything that changes, any updates, anything that you think would be helpful in that regard. And I think there would be a lot of support, not only from this committee, but from other members as well, to help in that. So we appreciate it very much.
Thank you all very much for your time and attention this afternoon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. Thank you very much again for your attention on this important topic and for your questions and engagement. That is very much appreciated. So seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Duran moves that we rise. Without objection, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.